Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
And welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we've got a fascinating guest today. I'm sure those of you that watch the news have heard all of the distressing accounts about Thailand and the various things that are going on there. Well, my guest today is from a Thai background. In fact, his book is called Talk Thai, The Adventures of a Buddhist Boy. So we're going to be getting some insights into that culture and also into his life and what he has had in the way of experiences being a multicultural personality. I want to welcome Ira Sukrungrung. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's a delight to have you as a guest. I'm always fascinated with different cultural aspects. I want my audience to know a little bit about you. You have authored both fiction and nonfiction, as well as poetry in various venues. And you currently are the assistant professor of English at the University of South Florida. And Florida you call home, obviously, because that's where you work. Why, Ira, did you feel you wanted to do your story about your background and what it was like being brought up in the United States? Both of your parents were from Thailand. Tell us why it was so important to you to talk about this.
Well, I think it's not only did I want to tell my story, I also wanted to understand my story. Part of my writing impulse, part of the reason why I am a writer is because I write to understand these questions that I always often ruminate about, you know. And this one of the questions is, of course, what it is to be an immigrant son, and a Thai immigrant son, where my family, my mother and my father and Auntie Sue raised me to be nothing else but Thai. And I wanted to understand, their fears of this country, their hesitancy. I wanted to know, you know, what it was that, I wanted to understand their dreams and their heartbreaks. So the reason I wrote Talk Thai was to answer these questions, or at least to make an attempt to answer these questions. I don't think anything is ever answered. I think there's always things that, the reason why writers keep writing is an attempt at tackling a larger subject.
Mm-hmm. Now, what brought your family to the United States?
Well, I think the Thai immigrant is a different type of immigrant. They weren't escaping anything, you know. Thai immigrants usually view America as a workplace, a place to make more money than they could in Thailand. And my mother and Auntie Sue especially, their supervisor at their nursing school in Bangkok received letters from hospitals in Chicago asking for nurses to work in Chicago. So for both my aunt and my mother, they decided, you know, yeah, what the heck, let's move. Let's come to a country where they've often heard so many stories about, and let's try to make a life here. And with the knowledge, of course, that they will always return back to Thailand. That's the thing with most Thai immigrants, is that they come to the country, but they always think of going back. They never want to stay.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were going through this process, because I know we have many listeners that have multicultural backgrounds, let me just backstep for a moment here. You have a wonderful, wonderful quote that's in the front of your book by Moose Soseki. Sometimes while wandering, when I cannot find which road leads back the way I came, the road goes anywhere, and anywhere at all is home. Now, your family with the Thai and saying, well, we're always going to go back home, and you have some wonderful stories that you share about your family. When you were going through this, when you were doing this research, were your relatives open with you about how they felt about certain things? Did you find that you had to ask a lot of questions, or did you work more from memory?
Well, a mixture of both. I think my mother is a very secretive person, and she believes that what is the past is always the past. Why bring it back up again? But I did ask her a lot of questions, and she, you know, it takes a while for her to open up, but she eventually will open up. And Auntie Sue, my mother's best friend and my second mother, she's more of the storyteller, so she was more willing to share, you know, what my mother felt when she first came to the country, all these things that my mother wouldn't say about herself. Auntie Sue was able to say those things. With my father, he was more of an enigmatic, you know, man. I had to really put things together. Well, from the stories I've heard from my mom and about him, he was a natural storyteller also, but his stories were often fiction, very much like tall tales more than anything else. So, yeah, I did have a lot of help from my family, but I also did things that, you know, I looked at old photo albums. I tried to, you know, to recreate that world, the 1980s. I tried to look at old newspapers just to get the flavor of that time period. And I know that during 1968, when my parents did come from Thailand, it was such a strange time period. It was during the Vietnam War. It was a time period of flux in many ways, flux and change, which is very apropos to, you know, the story, my mother's story too, especially when she came to America. Absolutely.
Now, you have so many incidences, then I'm just going to extract a couple. You spoke about when you came to this country and how you had to learn English, but you learned English by reciting lines from sitcoms and TV shows, which a lot of people utilize. And,
absolutely.
It was, "Here's Johnny, what are you talking about, Willis?" "To the Moon, Alice." And you would sing all the commercial jingles. And
yes,
you really liked the one about the Oscar Mayer wiener. And
right,
that was, you said your favorite meal was nuked Oscar Mayer hot dogs over rice with a dash of fish sauce.
It's still my favorite meal. I can't get over it. My wife thinks I'm crazy, but it is still my favorite meal. Absolutely. You know, when I was, my family taught me to speak nothing else but Thai. So when I went to first grade, I suddenly realized, God, there's this other world out there. And English was something I just didn't have a firm grasp on. So really what the TV and pop culture taught me English, you know, I would recite all these jingles over and over again. Even hearing my name, Ira, pronounced correctly was different. Because ironically enough, even though my parents, you know, wanted me to be Thai, they gave me a Jewish first name, Ira. But they never could pronounce it. They always say, Ira, Ira. So when I was in first grade and I would hear, like, my teacher call my name in the roll or say my name when she needed me, she would say it correctly. I wouldn't respond because I didn't realize that was me. You know, who is this Ira character? You know, I'm always used to Ira, Ira. So even that was, it was such a time period of adjustments and learning.
I had to chuckle. Because when you're talking about this, I have in front of me the section on your book, and you said you had wanted your mother to say that the reason she gave you the name of Ira is because she had an illicit affair with a rich Jewish doctor.
Yeah.
And you were their offspring. I mean, this is just, you had such a vivid imagination, but you wanted something exciting. You wanted something
that
was a sitcom special here with your name.
Yes, and this is still an ongoing conversation we always have at least once a year is, you know, the genesis of where my name came from. And, you know, she stands by the book by always, I'm like, are you sure? You didn't have an affair. You didn't, you know, is this, I'm not named after the taxi driver who drove us to the hospital. So, you know, my tales of my invention of Ira, the name Ira, gets bigger and bigger, but she keeps sticking to it. We just got it from a book of American names. And I always say, it's not really American, it's Hebrew. And she's like, oh, you know, Jewish people are good lawyers, so you could be one. But of course, I broke her heart, like, you know, and became a writer. So,
Oh, gee, you just didn't live up to your name, but in Hebrew, it's called the Watcher.
Oh,
and that's what it means. Now, your aunt was such a special, special woman. Tell us the story about your mother and your aunt and how they met and how they became so close. The association between these two women is so rich with history and so very, very special. So tell us their story.
Yeah, absolutely. Auntie Sue, you know, I call her my aunt, but she's really my second mother and my mother's best friend. They met in Chicago. They were not friends in Thailand. They met in the nurse's dorm in Chicago. And my mother then, back then, 1968, she was going through some severe homesickness. And but the way my aunt tells the story is that there's always that one nurse in the dorm who would go to work, come back, and not go back out again. She would just kind of hole herself into the room, in her room. And my aunt is a social person. She talks to everyone. And so she one day, she just, you know, knocked on the door, and my mom opens it, and my aunt smells something burnt, and my mom said she had dinner, which was radishes and eggs, and it's pretty much what my mom knows how to make badly is radishes and eggs, and she kept making it all the time. My aunt would come over, and she's like, well, have you eaten yet? And my mother would say, yeah, I had radishes and eggs, radishes and eggs, radishes and eggs. And so when my aunt decides to cook her first meal, and my aunt's a phenomenal cook, she first cooked when she came to America. She never cooked in Thailand. So when she made her first meal of fried rice, she wanted to share this meal with someone. And it was late at night, but the only person that was awake and crying was my mother. She can hear the crying through the door. And so they sat around this plate of fried rice and talked about how they missed home. And from then on, they've been really inseparable. They even now, when they've moved back to Thailand, they're still with each other. They call each other every day, even when we're not together. But most of the time, they're together. We'll stand there together.
And this is a relationship where your auntie just moved with the family, you know, just went with the family everywhere. She moved in to your home, and she was the cook, and she watched over you, and she was your nanny. That's what
she
would call it.
She's also, I think, the rational part of my family. She actually, my mother would have these bouts of anger and irrationality. My aunt would be the rational person, the person who kept everything in line and everything moving. She tried really hard to hold the family together, but in the end, you know, it kind of fell apart anyways. But she was a person that I turned to, for life lessons, really, you know, for life lessons, so.
Well, I loved your description of what it was like for you to learn math and language, and you had a sentence in your book that I thought was fabulous. I underlined it. Language was an infuriating Rubik's Cube, and I've never been able to get the Rubik's Cube to work, period. And I just thought of that description, and I went, oh, my goodness, how frustrating that must have been for you.
Oh, absolutely, because Thai and English are such opposite languages. Thai is a very tonal language, and it has, like, for example, Thai has, like, 44 consonants and 32 vowels, and those vowels are different tones. English also, I mean, though it has, a simpler letter system, you know, I just couldn't understand how the usage of it at times. When I was a kid, I couldn't understand the usage of it. It was like a puzzle or a Rubik's Cube for me, which is, I find ironic, too, now that I've become an English professor. I ended up loving playing that game, trying to find wonders with the English language.
Are you still there with me? Uh-oh. I think we may have lost him. My guest, Ira Sukhrungrun, we have been on the phone with him. They had a major power outage in Florida, and he was not able to use any phone but a cell phone, and I think the signal dropped. So, Don, if you are listening, please try to get him back on the phone line because he's gone. But in the interim, what I want to do is mention to you that Ira Sukhrungrung, his book is called Talk Thai, The Adventures of a Buddhist Boy. And I thought it, you know, not being aware that all of this. Oh, there we go. Are you back, Ira?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. The signal dropped.
Yes, I'm back.
Oh, good. Okay, that's super. Ira, you have so much good information in your book about the various aspects of the Thai culture. And with what is going on in the news today, I mean, we have got so many hot spots in the world. I remember someone saying, oh, I think this was about 15 years ago, at any one given time, there's anywhere from 200 to 250 hot spots in the world. The Thai culture has always, in my mind's view, been one that has had a grace and an elegance about it that was just absolutely awesome, and I've always thought going to Thailand would have been just an exquisite experience. And in your book, you talk about the rules on your refrigerator, and they were Thai rules. Tell us about those Thai rules.
Yes, my mother put up these rules, and it was on this yellow legal pad, and she has a signature. It's almost not even like rules. It was almost like a contract, because I had to sign it myself at the bottom in my, like, you know, very young, bad handwriting. And these rules were Thai rules, you know, don't have your head higher than an elder. Never touch an elder's head. It's a sin. Never point your feet at Buddha. Always talk Thai. The rules, actually the title of the book, Talk Thai, came from one of the rules. And, of course, one of the biggest rules is remember you are Thai. That was the most important rule. And that's the rule that my mother always pulled out when she thought I was becoming too American at times. Like, what's mm-hmm. that rule? And I would have to repeat it, remember I was Thai. So for a long time, this was what I followed, right? But of course, as I got older and I became more American and saw that, you know, America had like Thundercats and Looney Tunes and all these cool things, right? Remember I was Thai, actually became further and further from my mind. And suddenly I was like most, I think, immigrant sons, I was at this conflict of, you know, what is it that is Thai in me? What is it as American? And for a kid who just wants to try to fit in, do I have to sacrifice one so that I could be, you know, embraced? Mm-hmm. And that was always the struggle. You know, After a while, I felt like I had to sacrifice what was Thai in me to fit into American culture, to not be picked on, to not, you know, be seen as different. But, of course, now that I'm older, it's the tie in me that I want to preserve, the tie in me I never want to lose.
Mm-hmm. I think that that is something that, regardless of what cultural background we may have inherited, and I think almost every being on this planet is more like a Heinz 57 than what we like to acknowledge, because people have traveled around the world and throughout the centuries, throughout the millennia. And it's fascinating to see how there is that cross-connection. But there are those traditions, there are those parts of your life that came from your family that I think are very, very special. But I really enjoyed so much of what I felt is a typical thing that kids go through. I don't care whether you're Thai, whether you're Italian, I don't care whether you're American, Indian, it doesn't make any difference. You said it so well, and that is wanting to belong, wanting to feel like you fit in somewhere. And you were quite shy, and there was a fight that went on in the school, and there was a guy by the name of Mike and Leo that really got into it, and they wanted to blame you for everything. Of course, you didn't do anything. You were just a bystander, but the teacher was smart enough to ask you what the truth was, and you didn't say it, but you nodded. And that was so much fun because you ended up with a very good friendship out of that.
Absolutely. That was probably one of the first turning points of my life, of kind of witnessing the fight between Mike and Leo and finding Mike as a friend. And he became so essential later in my life about informing me about what was American. He was so smart and so strange at the same time that he opened these doors for me that I didn't think could be open or wanted to be open. But yeah, Mike and Kevin too, who I meet later.
Mm-hmm. Now your mother had a habit. I love the cultural background in your book, Thai Talk. Your mother had given you a little Buddha pendant. Now, you have people that have the St. Christopher medals. You have all kinds of things that people will adopt, depending on what their cultural, spiritual background has been, that they like to wear. And she demanded that you wear this Buddha pendant. You lost it. And when did you find out that she had a drawer full of these things?
You know, when I lost, you know, these bullies ripped the Buddha pendant away, and she had made such a big deal about this Buddha pendant connecting me to my, that, like, this Buddha belonged to my ancestors, and it was like the first time I ever felt connected to Thailand in a really intimate way. And so when these bullies ripped the pendant off my neck after they had beaten me up, I wasn't afraid of the bullies. I was actually more afraid of my mother's reaction of that lost pendant. So when I went home, you know, and told her what had happened, I had thought that she was going to be angry at me. But what had happened was I woke up the next day and there was another Buddha pendant. And throughout the rest of my life, and I've lost many Buddha pendants after that, there's always a Buddha pendant. You know, and she said Buddha will always find you. And that was really true, you know. Buddha always did find me, or at least she always had one for me.
Mm-hmm. Your mother was a very resourceful lady, and I really think you inject so much good humor regarding your culture and dealing with one that had such an openness, the American culture, in so many ways, and yet your mother being so fearful that you would not honor or respect your traditions and what you had from, as we often called it when I was growing up, the old country, wherever that old country might be. But there were five wonderful principles, which I think should be in everybody's life. It was abstention from killing or harming living beings, abstention from stealing, abstention from improper sexual conduct, abstention from telling lies, from impolite speech, from setting people against each other, from gossiping, from backbiting, also abstention from taking alcohol and harmful drugs. Now, you said these rules were higher on the refrigerator than the previous ones that we had talked about. And your mother used these to constantly threaten you, and I've got to share this. If you lied, your mother would say, "Ah, Buddha make you insect. Next time, small mouth can say nothing." If you stepped on an ant, she'd wrinkle her forehead and say, "Come back as a hippo, big feet, small brain." I just love this. This is so mom stuff.
Yeah, the five precepts were used as threats and they work. They really work. But more importantly too is that she really believed what she really her goal in life not only was for us to be reborn together as mother and son. You know, and if we did well in our lives, do what we're supposed to do in our lives, we're good Buddhists, good people, then this would happen, that we would be reborn again, happy.
Well, you give such a clear image regarding the cultural diversification, and you're going backwards and forward between it. And when I was growing up, I remember knowing Italian children, where I think of one family in particular, Aldo and Fina. And Fina never chose to learn English, and she had this beautiful boy, and the boy could go, you know, speak English beautifully, speak Italian beautifully. He was, you know, he had a foot in both cultural worlds and was very much at ease with it. But his father was very Americanized. His father adapted to the American environment very, very well, but his mother never did. And I was thinking about that when I was going through your book, how many times, whether someone's from Korea, whether they're from Africa or, you know, otherwise, unless they've had the good fortune of having an education. Now, your mother was a nurse, and she came here to this country, and she worked as a nurse, she and your auntie both, very intelligent women. But it was really tough for her. It was very, very tough for her to be at ease in this environment, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. She was so fearful of America. And, her family is so close. And so she has, you know, 8 siblings. And it was hard for her to leave that. But she did it because of the urging of her family, saying, like, you know, this would be a better move for you. You'll make better money in America. And then you'll come back. But my mom was also fearful of image, you know, or of what we call in many Asian cultures, losing face.
Mm-hmm.
Of her pride, not saying the right things, not knowing what to do. All these things put a lot of fear and stress onto her. The only time my family felt at ease was when they went to temple and they were around other Thai people. And that's when I saw them relax, you know, and their shoulders came down a bit. They walked with a little bit more ease, whereas I would watch them in the malls or grocery store, and they would just be so tight and robotic. For many immigrants, in many ways, part of being an immigrant is to find places of comfort, places where they feel like home, even if it isn't home.
I agree, and I think that's a very natural patterning.
Yeah.
And I think the children have an easier time adapting. But that's one of the gifts that your book gives, is a perspective of someone that does have a foot in multiple worlds. And, you know, one foot is in one is foot in the other, and you're constantly having to do a dance between the two. And then you're wondering, who am I in the process? Do I have to choose an allegiance to either one? And the reality is, you can appreciate all spectrums of it. You don't have to make it an either or. Am I correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It shouldn't be an either or. You know, you should be able, and people should be able to respect that a lot of people, you know, that we come from different places, that we are different people. And see their culture and understand their culture. At the same time, I think also this is always for someone who has both feet in both worlds. This is also going to be an ongoing thing that one thinks about. You know, I constantly think about what it is to be an immigrant son, especially knowing that my parents have moved back to Thailand, and knowing that my nearest relative is 8,000 miles away. Suddenly, I feel alone, lonely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I start wondering, you know, I married, you know, of course, a wonderful woman, Catherine Regal, who's white. But in terms of blood relationship, that's so far away. And that's probably, like I said before, that's why I write, is to understand these conflicts, these lonelinesses that, immigrants sometimes can feel.
With your family in Thailand and all of the political upheaval that is going on in that part of the world today, how are they working with all of this? Is your family all right?
Yes. Well, my mother and Auntie Sue, they live in the north. They're about 10 hours away from the conflict, the main conflict, where the protesters are. My father is outside of Bangkok, but nowhere near the zone. So they're fine. It's really such an awkward and unfortunate time right now for Thailand and the violence that seems to be escalating day by day. But every time my mother calls, I ask her about it, you know, I ask her what's going on. And she gives me, I'm like, are you okay? And she said, yeah, absolutely. I'm nowhere near it. You know, nothing's getting. So life is going on in
mm-hmm.
Thailand. So, but, you know, this fight for freedom and democracy will continue to happen.
Well, I'll tell you, Ira, I really enjoyed your book. I think Talk Thai, The Adventures of a Buddhist Boy, and I love the photo of you in your Superman suit, cape and all.
Yeah.
I think that's just absolutely marvelous, and I'm sure that your family is very proud of what you've been able to do, although your mother probably, if she knew everything that was in the book, would say, no, 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 you didn't get it right. But
oh, yeah.
I think your honesty about the family, the relationship, your Auntie Sue, the cultural shifts that you had to go through, all of those variables, I think, again, you've given a wonderful, wonderful gift of yourself. And I think for your own family, you are leaving a tremendous legacy. And I think that it's just terrific. Do you have a website that people can go to?
Absolutely. My website is www.sukrungrung, sukrungrung.com. And you can find on the website actually Auntie Sue's recipes, Thai recipes. And you can also find on the website deleted chapters and an alternate ending to the book.
Fabulous. All right. All of those gifts will await you if you will go to www.sukrungrung.com, and that's sukrungrung.com. Talk Thai, The Adventures of a Buddhist Boy. It's been a delight, Ira, having you as a guest. Thank you so much, and I'm glad we were able to get you back, and I hope your power comes on pretty soon.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a delight. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hello, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-815-9756. That's the worldwide toll-free number. And you're more than welcome to give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Tomorrow we're going to be having a wonderful guest, Cindy Thompson. We're going to be talking about her book, A Cup of Cappuccino for the Entrepreneur's Soul. Now, this book is well done in that it talks about many individuals who have been able to achieve a level of success with their business and what enabled them to do it. And so often we'll hear stories about, gee, this one got $5 billion, you know, in 2 weeks and so on and so forth. The real entrepreneur usually travels a journey that entails years, not overnight successes. And it takes a lot of work, a lot of discipline, many times failures that make you just think you're totally insane for continuing what you're doing. Yet it's all part of what makes the entrepreneur what that entrepreneur is. So Cindy has gotten some wonderful stories collected, wonderful insights, and if you're an individual where you say, I would like to do this on my own, you're going to want to know about it. On Friday, Gary Ryswick is going to be my guest. This man has put together a book called The Thousand Mile Stair. And I have known, both as a counselor as well as in members of family with friends, I've just known so many people that have had to deal with the aspect of Alzheimer's. Well, Gary's family had a gene that this was prominent throughout the entire family, and his story will touch your heart, and it will also give you some information, medical information, etc., that maybe you were not aware of. And I think eventually there's going to be, and probably within less than 10 years, there's going to be an understanding of how we can reverse that process that creates this protein plaque in the brain that causes this devastation and the deterioration of the brain cells themselves. So there's going to be some real major strides in this because a lot of it has to do, again, with a gene as well as nutrition and some other things that they're going to figure out eventually how we can utilize this so we can not have this at such a devastating level because it is becoming more and more prevalent and so many people are living so much longer. But Gary's story really will touch your heart and your mind. So those are the guests that are coming up. Also, hey, if you have had a paranormal experience, whether it's seeing a ghost, talking, communicating with animals, unique experiences, I want to hear your story. Why? Because I am putting together a book, and I'm going to be in this book putting 100 stories in it, stories about anyone that wants to share, whether it is, again, about an out-of-body, you name it, I'm interested in hearing your story. Why? Because when we can share experiences and share what happens to us, and everybody's experience is their own unique happening, then that enables us to help someone else. So I'd love to hear from you. Send me an email with your story. Be sure to put your contact information there and send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Maybe you've had a past life regression and you found yourself aware of things you didn't know before. I'd love to hear your story. And be sure to put in the subject line, story for Donna's book, or the equivalent thereof, so I know what it is, and hit that little red exclamation point on your email flag section that says high importance, because I want to be able to give it attention immediately and put it into the file. So we're getting some stories, and I'm just loving them all. I think that's marvelous, and I'm thrilled to have you send them along to me. Meanwhile, if you'd like to chat with me today, give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. That's a toll-free worldwide number. Animals and wellness. Well, for those of us that are animal lovers and live with our pets day in and day out, we know how very, very important they are in our lives. But there is research that is coming forth that really brings it home scientifically. And it always makes me chuckle because to me it's like, well, gee whiz, isn't this obvious? It makes a difference. Do you remember a time when they wouldn't let you bring a gerbil, a horse, a dog, a cat into a hospital? And they said, oh, this is terrible. You couldn't do it. And yet now we're able to do it. There are wonderful people that have pets that they take into these facilities, and especially retirement facilities or those that have terminally ill patients like children's sections, where they'd say, oh, this is terrible. The children would get horrific bugs, and here are these people so isolated. And you bring in the animals, and they come to life. The animals do something so special for them, and it's a mutual exchange of joy that people of all ages really, really benefit from. Well, Dr. Jeffrey Thompson, he's the director of the Center for Neuroacoustic Research in California, he said the sounds that animals make have a great deal as far as, helps us a great deal as far as relieving anxiety, encouraging, getting well. Believe it or not, it even can prevent osteoporosis. How can this happen? Well, the human body is nothing but energy. Tonalities affect us. Think of it when you are listening to some beautiful Brahms music and then somebody comes along with hard rock. What does that do to your nervous system? Well, what you've got here is something that on one level will be very harmonious and soothing, on another level will be very discordant and very, very agitating. And it's been known for a long time the effects of sound on the human body, but with technology today, we're able to even research it to a level of refinement we didn't understand before. Now, we all know that cats, when they're contented, they have this rich, luscious purr that they just emit. And the cat family, they say, very seldom gets osteoporosis or broken bones. And even when they're not well, they have a purring that they will emit. And they say the studies they've done show that the vibration of a cat's purr, somewhere between 25 hertz and 50 hertz cycles per second, improves bone density and speeds healing of tissues. Now, Tom E. Loeb, who is a physician, he is the director of the Benaveda Medical Group, and he said it has a deep effect on humans. And he uses a machine in his medical practice that recreates purring sound frequencies, and he treats people that have osteoporosis with it. So he said the sounds make a difference. It creates a harmonic modality for the human body. Well, maybe you don't have a cat. Maybe you're allergic to cats. Well, you can get audio tapes that play the purring of cats. And you can get free downloads of them at freesound.org. And you can play them to your heart's content. They're very soothing. People that are very ill, when cats are brought into their environment and they start petting them, if they have a problem with blood pressure, the blood pressure goes down immediately. It's that harmonic between the cat and the individual. Dogs do the same thing. They have found so many times with so many different areas of research, your heart rate slows down, your blood pressure goes down when you are holding a dog in your lap. And dogs make sounds that maybe we may or may not be aware of. When they're mellow, they do what they call a play pant. And it's different from when they're panting, like when they've been doing a lot of walking or they're extremely thirsty. They say the play pant, try to say that five times really fast, play pant, it's more of an outflow, which lets you know that everything is okay. And other dogs will read it as such, and humans benefit from hearing the sound. And they say if you volunteer at a shelter, and when you're working with animals, especially if they've been under stress, when they get into that mode, that means that they've relaxed and they really are feeling better, but they're great for you. Dolphins, we've heard a lot about dolphins. Dolphins are just amazing, amazing mammals. And they emit frequencies from 20 hertz to an amazing 20,000 hertz. Now, that is an upper register higher than is used in ultrasound equipment. And they have found in their research it creates physiological changes within the body tissue of people as well as their blood chemistry. And they have shown in the research that the sounds of the dolphins when they are emitting sounds, it actually promotes a healing. They say they have found that mammals can use their own sonar, the dolphins, to scale for problems like tumors and obstructions in people when people are swimming with them. Now, they've had research about dogs that can do that. But dolphins, yep, they can target it. And they say they can actually target those zones with those sound modalities. And those sound modalities actually have an effect on the tumors. And guess what? Sound travels best through water. And people over and over that have ended up swimming with dolphins have felt like they have just benefited in ways they couldn't even express or explain just because they have been around that energy frequency of sound and presence with these magnificent animals. Now, you can get dolphin dreams. You can find it on Amazon.com, and there's so many different places that will have dolphin sounds recorded. So just a few tidbits of information there. We're going to take a break here. Telephone lines are open, 888-815-9756. When we come back, a recipe or two, and maybe a little bit of that and a little bit of this. So give me a call if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. People always have to have a purpose in their life. If they don't have a purpose, they walk around like zombies. They will find all kinds of reasons and excuses for not participating in life. But I'm always fascinated with how once people find something that they really like to do, they get involved with it, and lo and behold, not only does their life change, but they affect the lives of others in a very special way that in a million years they never would have imagined could have happened. There's a lady by the name of Lisa Klein, and I came across her information, and I so enjoyed her story that I thought I would share it with you today. Now, she was a person that loved being on the Internet, surfing the Internet, and she said, I really, really like to do that, and I didn't have anything in mind when I was surfing. There wasn't any great question of life, nothing like this. She was just surfing. Well, Hurricane Katrina was the event that had an impact on her. When she was reading material on the Internet about Hurricane Katrina, she came across some information that on a church lawn in New Orleans, there were a huge crowd of people who needed everything. Towels, blankets, jeans, t-shirts, baby clothes. Well, those two words, baby clothes, just really hit her right in the middle of her forehead, and she goes, oh my goodness, I've got a whole attic full of kids' clothes. And she had, she's one of these people, she will save things and she tucks them away in nice tidy little boxes and they were all up in her big attic. And she said, I had so many clothes that I'd outgrown and put away and I had decided I'd save everything because if I was going to have another baby, it would come in handy. Well, she decided after reading what she did that she was going to contact everybody she knew and let's get the stuff down to the people in New Orleans. Well, she ended up, along with a number of other people, and of course she was part of a mom's group, and a lot of these young mothers said, oh, well, we've got all kinds of baby clothes, so they donated all of their stuff too. So she decided she was going to send it all out, and they all helped her, and she said, oh, it was just wonderful. Well, Lisa ended up having another baby, and she got to thinking, she said, you know, I've got all of these cute clothes from my second child. So she went back to her mom's group that she had stayed involved with, and she was asking for donations. And she was surprised and amazed at the volume that she got. Lisa said, there's got to be some place we can put this stuff, give it. So she contacted her local hospital, and she asked someone in the pediatric section if there were any new moms that needed baby clothes. Well, the nurses on duty said, absolutely, we've got a lot of moms that need it. And so little gift boxes were put together. Gift boxes, and they would have on it baby girl or baby boy. And without Lisa even asking, it was like an invisible telepathic message went out. People were dropping off baby clothes at her home. Before she knew it, she had her basement was full of them. Her garage was full of them. And the Girl Scouts in her local neighborhood got involved. They were knitting blankets. Seniors were crocheting tiny hats. Consignment shops and local nannies were making donations for babies, too. She said every time she'd open more bags, she'd find her living room floor was just in piles, boys and girl clothes. She'd separate them. And she has a six-year-old daughter that got down beside her. So, Mommy, why are you doing all of this? And she said, she asked her little girl, if you were a mommy and you only had a little money, what would you buy for your baby, food or a hat? And her six-year-old daughter said, food. And her mom smiled. She said, well, we can give the babies the hat. So she got someone that decided to say, well, let's take another step. There's a Cool Tops. It was a chain of kids' salon. Said, we'll take all donations here. Well, guess what? Her friends helped her. They were delivering clothes 10 a week, 15, then 20, and social workers and nurses relayed the story after story to Lisa about the hugs of gratitude they were getting from new moms that these boxes of baby items were bringing into the wonderful joy it was bringing into new mothers' lives. Well, she decided she was going to develop a website called lovedtwice.org, lovedtwice.org. Lisa, to date, has delivered more than 20,000 pounds of clothing for 2,000 babies in hospitals, shelters, and clinics. Her new goal is to have 100 boxes a month stuffed with clothes for newborns up to 12 months, each one containing a new toy, a board book, even diapers. But she said Love Twice is about keeping the babies warm and cozy. It's about giving moms hope, too. Sometimes just knowing someone cares is enough to keep someone going, and that's what we do. We care. So her website is lovedtwice.org. And here are a couple of other things, places that you can go to. If you want to help a hero, everything from kitchenware to furniture to bedding can make a difference in the lives of veterans and their families. There's a free pickup at pickupplease.org, or you can call 800-775-VETS. You also can sell your things if you want at a consignment shop. You can go to consignmentshops.com or list it at secondhandmall.com, and people will buy or rent just about anything. And if you have gently used but outgrown toys, you can go to rmhc.org to donate for facilities that house young patients' families. That's RobertMaryHarryCharles.org, RMHC.org. Lots of good people out there. And if you need to find something of interest, look for it. Be like Lisa. Be open and receptive, and you never know what's going to push that magic button inside of you that allowed you to transform your own life and touch the hearts and minds of others as well. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your own soul. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back with you here tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.